Welcome to the Diary of a Daddy-O podcast, brought to you by myself, David Powell. On this podcast, I'll be talking to a number of daddy-os who are trying to juggle their respective jobs and ever-growing duties as a father. We will be discussing the ups, the downs, and everything in between. We want you to come along on the ride with us. So without further ado, welcome to the Diary of a Daddy-O.
This is a diary pod about how work routines flip, turn upside down, and we'd like to take a second to let you know how we juggle being a dad while being a CEO. Daddy-o.
So welcome back to A Diary of a Daddy-o. We are on episode 5 of series 2. I am joined today by a gentleman called Tom Gandy. I will hand you the floor as always, I'll give it to all the guests. Tell us a little bit about your sort of career currently and your family setup as it is.
Good to be on here. As you mentioned, Tom Gandy, I head up an SEO team for an e-commerce SEO agency. We literally just specialize in SEO for e-com. We don't do any B2B, any service-based stuff. Career today, I've always been agency side, just progressed through the ranks over the last 5-6 years. Obviously, as part, during that time, met my partner who I'm now engaged to, and then we've had 2 kids, Amelie, who's 3 actually next week, and Margot was born end of November last year. So very much in the deep end of new baby, but she's actually been very good, sleeps better than my oldest. So yeah,
What would you put that down to? The sleeping thing? Is it just luck of the draw? Have you taken some hacks and sort of like lessons for number two from number one, or what would you put it down to?
Well, my first had reflux, colic. So that means you literally can't put them on the back. And so that was a pretty painful 3-4 months until she got to that, like, digestion phase was complete. So that doesn't exist with Margot, which definitely helps. And I think just be more chilled, like, you don't react to every move they make, every noise they make, like you do the first. That's definitely how I felt going into this one. You're just a bit more assured, and you also just can't give them as much time as you'd probably want to give them, because you have a toddler that's charging about trying to get your attention or trying to do loads of other things.
I can imagine. Obviously, I've only got one I say baby, but he's definitely a toddler now. I keep having to sort of correct myself. He's on the move and saying no a lot now, so he's no longer a baby. But yeah. I can imagine number two sort of, I always say it, sorry, don't understand how you have the time to give your attention and love to another child when baby one is just all consuming, isn't it? But you obviously, people do it. People have two babies and stuff. So there must be a way of juggling it.
Yeah. I mean, the toddler personality is pretty funny. They're pretty determined to not do anything they're supposed to do when they want to.
I think the last 2 weeks for me is when Brody has just suddenly started to just not want his nappy being changed or clothes to be put on him. And it's gone from someone who would just casually lie down for a nappy change to now just like, it's like a WWF wrestling match. It's absolutely carnage. But at the same time, you find yourself laughing at it and then you're like, no, try not to laugh because then they think it's a game. But the personalities are starting to show at this age, that's for sure.
Yes, definitely.
I guess I had a little look on like your LinkedIn and stuff in terms of, like you said, you progressed through the ranks at the agency you work for in London. When Amelia came into your life, so she's 3 now, right? You said next week.
Yeah.
What was your sort of point of career at that point? Were you, 3 years ago, was that during COVID?
That was, she was a proper COVID baby.
Yeah. Okay, so you were working from home, I take it, like, enforced?
Yeah, both of us were working from home, obviously, but then Emily came. I think it's a pretty, I mean, it's just, it feels mad looking back at COVID.
That it ever
happened. I think we actually had a dog. We got a dog, then we realised we were pregnant, and we were like, shit, I mean, if we'd known we were pregnant, probably wouldn't have gotten the dog. It was literally like a week before got the puppy and then found out, and obviously I wasn't in a position to definitely take Rupi back.
We've had him
to this day. It's added a layer of complexity. I mean, he's a proper COVID dog, like very much wants to be with you all the time. And Emily is like obviously very similar, but has they get used to normal life as well.
So have you seen any sort of differences between Emilio and Margot in terms of like their outward facing personalities? I know you said Margot's only November, wasn't it? So not very old at all. But can you see differences between the fact that like Emilio wasn't able to go out and be around groups of people? Because I know quite a few people who've had babies in COVID, and they've said to me that the like they're a bit more reserved than when they've had their next baby, because obviously for that reason, he's not even been able to see family and stuff like that.
Yeah, interestingly, nursery kind of actually says stuff, some similar things to that. It's like, obviously, she's got friends at nursery and she plays with them, but actually she likes talking to adults more. Or like she'll hang around the teachers because she likes to, she's quite well progressed in her like vocab and her conversation. So she does like, she has a lot of words and she can say a lot of things. So I don't know whether it's that or actually it's just because COVID, she was around adults and none of my friends have kids or had kids at that moment in time. And my partner, her friends all up in Manchester, that's where she's from. So yeah, I think at that point in time, maybe that does feed into it, like definitely more time spent with adults, whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. I mean, she's going to have years and years of school time, right? And she's going to make friends and she'll probably be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting because it's not like we've chosen, like if wherever we can have friends or kids over, we do. But naturally, yeah, COVID, no one could do anything.
How did you, you said about your partner being from Manchester and you having no sort of friends that had babies at the time. How did you find that? Because I know you put in the messages we had before recording the podcast that you said like it can be a little bit lonely and things like that. How did you find going through that pregnancy point of view from the like male perspective, not having people to sort of lean on for experience or even just talk to for someone who's going through it at the same time? Because I know my partner had two of her best friends were pregnant at the exact same time. So she had like a real nice sort of small tight-knit group and they were just going through it together. Whereas for me, I didn't have a real close friend that was like, oh, is this normal? Like, or even through the early pregnant, through after the childbirth as well, I didn't really have that. How did you find it?
Yeah, I mean, I was 25, 26 when Emily was born. So yeah, I think like naturally, I don't know, that's quite, for me, that feels like it's quite young. But, and that obviously feeds into it, right? Like all my friends are similar age. They're not in a position to have kids. I was always of the kind of step ahead in my thought process was when I meet the right person, like kids is, I'm not scared of having those sooner rather than later. But definitely, yeah, there is a sense of kind of loneliness in knowledge. You can read all the books you want to read, but ultimately they'll come out and they're absolutely nothing like the books they were going to be. Well, they don't do anything the way that perhaps you'd like to do it. But yeah, my soon-to-be brother-in-law, like he has kids, so I could ask him questions, and they actually had a baby same time as we did, but they were in Manchester, we were in London. So again, we didn't have someone like directly nearby.
Yeah.
I think anyone that's had kids since have always offered like my knowledge too. You know, if you ever feel like you can't do anything right or you've got particular problems, like most of the time everyone's had the same, and like being there to offer that kind of guidance or support that I didn't have, but I kind of had to tread the path myself and learn the hard way with a very, what I would call, difficult baby. Not because she chose to be, I think because of her reflux and colic, but it just was really difficult. But my family also really nearby for us now.
Okay.
So like at least I had someone, you know, they really helped and supported me throughout that period, and they obviously still do to this day. But it's not quite the same as someone that's like in the deep end right now at the exact same time.
Yeah, no, I fully understand where you're coming from with that one. I when you had Margot, what did you do in terms of time off from work from your perspective and then from your partner as well? I know you said you both worked for the same agency. How did you navigate that? How much time did you have off, obviously being after COVID and being normal, I guess?
Yeah. We actually met originally at the previous agency we were both at, and she left to go on in a new company, and I obviously have moved to Novos 3-4 years ago. But yeah, first time around, took a month off. This time for me, had a month off, but actually we get Christmas off anyway. So it actually ended up being around 6 weeks, which was really nice. I don't think there's ever enough time, like for, especially for a guy, I think you a month's pretty good, six mm-hmm. weeks really good. Any more than that, like, it's pretty uncommon to get that as a dad, I'd say. I'd definitely be keen for it. Maybe like 2-3 months would be great. That maybe you could have another month later in the year, whatever mm-hmm. that might be. But Joss, my partner, she took a year last time. She'll take another year this time. But it's just, it's not, I work from home a lot, so I don't feel like I'm missing out on just seeing them and, you know, experiencing them, because, you know, you pop downstairs, you can see them, they're here.
Yeah.
Obviously, Emily's at nursery most of the time, or with my mum. But yeah, I think that's the really big benefit of COVID is, obviously, there was a lot of, it was a crap time for everyone, but homeworking became so much bigger. Everyone mm-hmm. could do it. And that was actually a massive benefit, especially for new dads at that point in time, or new parents generally, but having the support of the other parent at all times in the house when you needed them. Even if it's just like, you want to go for a shower, or you want to go out for a run, or whatever it might be that you can't do when you're on your own with a kid, with mm-hmm. a child. And also then just being able to finish work, close the laptop, walk downstairs, do bath time, you know, help. I would never have been able to do that previously, because you get home at 6:30, 7:00, they're in bed more often than not at that point in time. You don't see them in the morning, you don't see them at night. So I'd say that's been the biggest benefit of COVID, especially for parenting, is just that ability to be flexible.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's one of my sort of non-negotiables going forward for my like work-life balance, is that I obviously there's always a financial sort of overarching thing that you need to sort of make sure that your family's going to be okay and cater for, but I don't think I could put myself in a position or career where, like you said, you were leaving before child was awake and then getting back at 6-7 o'clock and they're already in bed. I just couldn't do it. And I'm going to get my dad on the podcast later on, like in the series, because obviously when he had me and my older sister, like he was chatting to me at the weekend being like, well, I had to go away from Monday to Friday, and mobile phones weren't even a thing back then, so I could go four days sometimes maybe without even sort of hearing your voice, which is crazy to think that just one generation above was so sort of different now, like you said, post COVID, to what things are like now. It's crazy, and it's yeah. not through the fact that they wanted it to be like that, it was just there was no other way really.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean even the time, I don't spend much time away to be fair, but even when you do, you miss them, or you want to see them, speak to them, and obviously FaceTime's a very accessible thing for everyone to use now, all those that have iPhone phones. But I couldn't imagine that life or going ever going backwards to that.
No. How do you set boundaries other than just having a closed home working office door that when you're in there, you're in sort of work mode? Do you set strict boundaries, or is it a case of I will float in and out? What's your like sort of, yeah, what are your boundaries?
I'm probably not the best for boundaries. Like, I'll finish work, I've got Slack on my phone, you know, and I still picking things up at that point, even after I've closed the laptop. But normally it's like the morning is pretty fixed. I'll be in the office. Then after that, between like lunchtime, 2 o'clock, there's a bit of variance there where you have to do some exercise, or you know, go for a walk with the baby. She's at the age where she wakes up after 30 minutes nap in the car, and you have to get her in the pram, and then she'll go back to sleep. We've not quite mastered the lunchtime nap yet. And then I'll be back in for the afternoon. I think because I do a lot of freelance work, it means that once work finishes, my day-to-day, you know, you get online again for, I have a US client, and I've got some other clients in the UK, and that's when I do their work and the work mm-hmm. that I need to do for them. They're not super demanding, and they're not on me all the time. But naturally, if I tick things off every day, little bit by little bit, then I'm in a really good place. I'm not, you know, scrambling at the end of the month trying to crack it all out. I'm not the best with boundaries. I don't mind it. I'd rather be in the know rather than coming in the next day and not really know what's happened or what to pick up.
Yeah.
But then I also take the time I need, I feel, in the day to kind of either exercise or, you know, do something for me as well as for the children.
Yeah. I was looking at the agency you work for, and some of the clients that are on the site and stuff is like Adidas, Tala, TM Lewin, so like some big client names. Yeah, are they, yeah. Do you find it, are they hard to work with? Are they demanding so that you'll be, like you said, you'll be getting messages from these kind of people in the US or Germany or whatever saying you need to jump on this now? Or what's that like working for such a big agency?
Yeah, I mean, we work with pretty good clients all in all. There are times when they're demanding. So e-com, like, yeah, everything's a step change ahead of, especially the service industries that I did work with previously. They want things quicker, but also you see results quicker as well. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is not normally the bigger budgets that are hard to deal with. It's actually the ones that, you know, it means a lot more to them when they're spending $2,000-$3,000 a month.
Yeah.
And so they want to know what's going on, where that money's going, what you're spending it on. And that can often be the more difficult ones to deal with. But there have been times, like we're closed over Christmas, but well, the senior leadership team always like on if we need it, if we're needed. Mm-hmm. But some, yeah, there's been a client that you actually mentioned there. I won't pinpoint them specifically, but they did message over Christmas, you know, saying they needed something, and which we did it. But actually it turned out like it just wasn't, like, there was no need for us to really be doing it over the Christmas period. Could have waited.
Yeah.
It was nothing like critical that would have destroyed the business. But yeah, I think like working in an agency, you get such a good variety of clients and people you're working with. And also coupling that with the freelance work I did, I think I've got a really good grasp on, you know, naturally SEOs wouldn't know anything more really other than SEO, but I have a very keen interest in e-com as a whole. So it's not just about doing the work on a day-to-day, but it's about like pricing, fulfillment, that sort of side of it that naturally SEOs wouldn't care about. But there are things in there and knowledge that you can pick up from that that does influence SEO anyway. And if I didn't do freelance work, I'd never have a clue about these things because it's not something clients speak to you about, not in an agency life anyway.
It's interesting because obviously I come from a brand background where it was all that sort of information was at the forefront every single day. And we used to use an agency that did our SEO. And I remember like every time we'd have a meeting, it just sounded like a foreign language because it was so far removed from what I was in day to day. But now being on the sort of consulting and the agency side of things, getting a good steer on both sides of it and understanding like it is a holistic approach that is always going to win in these scenarios. So it's interesting to hear you say the same thing. And when you mentioned about the people that spend the least are the most demanding, I'd literally saw someone post that. Another SEO agency literally posted the same thing yesterday, saying the people that spend £500 bang their feet more than someone who spends £50,000. And it's, it is very true.
Yeah. I do understand it. For sure. But I think definitely something from the brand side that I try and push more than anything is like, telling us what you're buying and giving us forward information on that. So if you're buying something for autumn winter this year, give us that insight so we can plan, like, support your naturally you're not going to sell that stock, especially not via, if people don't know you that well, unless, you know, you've optimized to sell that stock, which, you know, doing it when you've already got the stock in and it's autumn winter, like you can't really appear for it overnight, not organically anyway. So yeah, that's like a really good example of where buying merchandising can sync with a channel, which actually you'll be surprised, it literally never happens unless we are.
Wow. Well, to be honest with you, I can understand that because I've seen it first. Our last guest asked a question which I'll pose to you now. It might be a little bit too early, but we always ask the next person on the podcast their question from the previous one. He said, what is your advice when it comes to pocket money for children? Would you scale the pocket money up as the child gets older, as though they're going through a career? Would it be linked to their roles and responsibilities in the house, their chores? And would you, if you had two children that were different ages like you have, so when Amelia's 10 and Margot's 7, would there be discrepancy between the pocket money based on how old they are? So it's quite a few questions there, and like, what's your take on it?
To be honest, I've always thought about it, and I think before I answer that, I was always the sort of guy that's like, I'm never gonna give my kid a phone to watch something when I'm eating dinner or they're at a table. I think in a restaurant it's different, but then you actually become a parent and that valuable 30 minutes or whatever you might get of just like they're occupied doing something that doesn't require you, is so valuable, and it's like something like eating dinner together, which is very rare. I'm sure you feel the same.
Yep.
But like, without something to kind of occupy them for that time, because after nursery, like Emily gets food at nursery, so she doesn't need food with us. But then we're always eating before bedtime, just because it takes so long. But actually, like now I'm a parent, I've changed my decision on that, and I feel like there's a time and a place to have a device and to give them it. That's definitely not like at all times, but yeah. Yep. Just wanted to preface with that, because I guess it kind of does tie into what did I think before I had kids about pocket money and what to give children. I think learning the value of money is super important. I've always had jobs even growing up. I didn't come from a poor background at all, but I was always taught like how you need to make money, and that you need to make money obviously to live, but it wasn't just going to be put on a plate for you every mm-hmm. day. And I definitely want to have the same sentiment with my kids. I want them to learn that they need to learn the value of money. And the only way to do that is by doing something to then earn a reward for that, which would be pocket money, I guess. And then being able to buy things, like I remember saving up for when the Apple iPod Touch first came out. I was like 450 quid, and it's taken me quite a long time to save up for that. It's obviously a very big purchase. I feel like 450 quid now, back then is probably like a grand now.
Yeah,
things
yeah.
have changed so much, but yeah. But even buying something like that, you get a really good sense of fulfillment. Like you've earned that, and yeah, to just be given new things, like £500 for a child now, if they're given that, they're just going to expect that all their life without having to work for it. And so yeah, there's definitely a balance. I'd like to say that when it comes to the time, I'll be saying you can either do the ironing, you can wash the car, whatever it might be, you can mm-hmm. do the floors for fiver, tenner, whatever it might be, and then that's the way they kind of learn the value of money. But and then maybe when they get a bit older and they have a job, but they're not like, you know, they may be at college or whatever it might be, they might get a monthly something.
Yeah. Just
support them in their college life, but also then when they go to uni as well. I think it's hard enough sometimes at uni doing all the fun things, doing and studying, but then also trying to have a job at the same time. It's 3 years of your life you're at uni, or four sometimes, or longer, I guess it depends what career you do. And you have so many years of, you know, like work.
Mm-hmm.
You should, and then you have kids, and you know the fun times definitely slow down in the sense of selfishness. Fun.
Yep.
You become much more selfless in the fun that you have, obviously, with your kids, and you do things much more wholesome. But yeah, I feel like those years in uni, you got to enjoy them, otherwise, you know, otherwise they end. And if you've been working the whole time, not actually enjoying it, that's not positive either.
Not at all. Yeah. What uni did you go to?
Well, I started at Huddersfield. So yeah, very big difference. I'm a Londoner, East London, mm-hmm. always. But part of my mindset was, I want to go north. I want to be further away from my family, friends, mm-hmm. just want to experience it. And actually, I did love being up north. We actually are moving to Manchester in May, so it made a big enough impression on me, I guess, to want to move up there. And then I finished my degree in Greenwich.
Okay.
So yeah, and that was only because I did a placement year, which was in marketing. And that's when I kind of fell into SEO, because I realized that's what I wanted to do. And naturally, when you've done 3 years at uni, you have a year out. So 2 years at uni, you have a year out. Those that you were living with are all finished by the time you go back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, there's no point in me going back out there. I don't know anyone else living there, so I might as well just stay at home and finish my career, my degree at Greenwich. And it's also a really nice place to finish your degree as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So are you moving up to Manchester to be closer to your fiance's family?
Yeah, that's it. So partly that, and then schooling. Yeah, that's obviously a massive major factor and something you've got to think about.
Yeah.
Around where we live, there's a lot of private schools, and you know, it's just very expensive. And I'm just not, you know, if I really thought that they'd be getting like a huge amount for it, don't get me wrong, it is an amazing thing to go to private schools. But there's a lot of really great grammar schools in Manchester that I think, you know, moving there with the sway of the family being there as well makes it even more appealing. And so she'll move there. She'll actually start nursery up there, and her cousin, who's my nephew, will be in her class as well. So it won't be like completely alien for Amelie moving there. But no, I'm looking forward to it. I've spent a lot of time there over the years, so I know it's not a move that's like completely alien to me either. But naturally, I'm moving away from my family, and she's moving closer to hers. It's just, you know, someone's got to compromise. And
yeah. Well, whereabouts in Manchester is it?
Altrincham, Hale.
Okay, yeah. So that's where I lived for a good 3 or 4 years.
Oh, nice.
That's where I started 3 or 4 clothing. We lived in apartment 3 or 4 in Altrincham. And then we moved to Hale for a year and a half. Before then, I made my move down to London.
So, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's interesting actually how many people that you speak to know of Altrincham or have been there or spent time there. I think when you go up there, especially for being a Londoner, people are more friendly. Mm-hmm. Actually, Altrincham's, from what everyone tells me, has come a long, long way. Obviously, they have a market now. It's pretty lovely around there, isn't it?
Really nice, really nice. Obviously, like Hale's always been quite like affluent, real nice sort of like little place to live and stuff. Footballers are there and everything. Yes. But Altrincham's obviously the next one along, and it's so much nicer than when I lived there.
Yeah,
we would always go over to Hale to try and spend our hard earned money if we weren't going into Manchester. But every
now
time
it's
I go
way around.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm a massive Man City season ticket holder, big fan. So I'm up in Manchester all the time. My family live in Cheshire as well. So yeah, I'm sure you'll love it up there.
Yeah, for sure. I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm hoping we don't bomb it like we did last year.
Do you think you're going to? How do you think your chances are?
I feel like we've had our lull this year earlier. Last year we'd been consistent, and then moving into the new year, we started to dip. Whereas it's kind of, I'm hoping it's the opposite way around this year. Anyway, we don't know. I mean, you guys seem to finish out seasons pretty well, so.
Yeah. Well, we've got, I know this isn't a football podcast, but we've got a very, very difficult March coming up, and we're now 11 games unbeaten, 11 wins in a row, actually, that we usually do an 18-game unbeaten run. So if we get through March, we'll have done 18 games and we'll have beaten Arsenal, Liverpool. So we'll see. The injuries are stacking up for everyone, so
yeah,
it'll be an interesting one. We digress. I guess going back a little bit to that point you made about finding the quality time of like being able to just have a meal with your partner for half an hour, and the decision to then use a device to occupy and keep your children slightly engaged in something that isn't you reading them a book or playing with a toy or talking through something, that just giving them the like watch a little bit of Miss Rachel, watch some Peppa Pig, whatever it may be. So you can have that 30 minutes where you go back to being like fiance rather than being mom and dad. Do you do anything else? Again, maybe not like every week we go on a date night. Do you put something in place to say, like, we need to make sure that we have some time, just the two of us? Obviously, you've been parents now for 3 years. Do you do anything in particular, make sure that grandparents babysit every month, or?
We've got nothing set in stone. I think you get back into the kind of rhythm of things. Well, with Amelie, we did slowly. You learn to kind of be without them a little bit more. But we have nothing set in stone. We tend to have dinner together every night, whether the kids are there or not, whether in bed or not. You know, it's a different story. I think just even making the effort to actually just have dinner together at the same time, it doesn't happen every night, naturally. You know, sometimes Margot's kicking off because she's a baby and she needs to go to bed earlier than Amelie does, whatever that might be. But yeah, nothing set in stone. It's something that I definitely want to put in. So I'm keen to hear any of your what you've done. It is so important, but it is also something that in the chaos of day-to-day life, you just forget about.
Yeah.
And it should be a priority as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, I've discussed it on a few podcasts with a few of the other dads about like sort of not just the relationship with your partner and making sure that you have that quality time, but relationship with yourself, whether that be going to play football, going to watch football, going to the gym, like you said, going for a run at lunchtime, like the sort of things that you struggle, or from my experience, I struggled a lot in the early part of having Brody because I just was all encompassed in the life as a dad that I've been so like excited to have. I was like, well, I'm not going to the gym for an hour because that's an hour less with Brody. I'm not going to go Man City because that's a good 7 hours out of my day to go up there, come back. I want that time with Brody, especially then when you have to invest 8 hours a day at work. If you, it's just a lot of time spent away from him. But like you said, as time's gone on and Brody's now a better sleeper, that we've got a consistency where we don't have to worry as much when someone comes to, like, my brother-in-law or my dad or mom comes to babysit. All they have to do is just be in the house. We don't have to worry about, oh God, baby's going to wake up and be sick, need a nappy change. But yeah, that sort of knocked us a little bit, I think, in terms of having that quality time and confidence to go for a date, because we'd be like, oh, we need to get back. We've been out for an hour, we need to get back already. I can tell he's going to wake up and stuff. But now, like, we went to a gig at the weekend, we went out for a meal the week before, and it's like you said, you slowly start to feel confident in having that time. And it's noticeable in the relationship as well, because albeit you do look at pictures of the babies pretty much the whole time and talk about the baby, you are still just the two of you together, like it was pre-baby, as best as it can be. But again, we don't have anything set in stone, but there's a lot more us time now. Brody's sleeping better, and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, I think you just have to accept when you have a new baby that you're basically in the trenches for a couple of years. Till they're at the point where you have to got that confidence that you know. Well, to be fair, Emily's never been a great sleeper. She wakes up a couple of times a night now, not for anything in particular, but anyway, I kind of digress. But yeah, you just got to accept that new baby. You're learning things. They're not consistent sleepers. Things are going to happen. They're going to get poorly, whatever it might be. And a couple of years out of a long time in their lives of you just kind of being there to attend to them, I think that's obviously the priority at this point in time. But definitely, I think as Margaret gets a bit older and a bit more consistent, then we can maybe start thinking about something more consistent moving forward.
Yeah.
It's super important to do.
It's funny you called it the trenches, because I see a lot of people say, like, that sort of early e-commerce building a brand or business is like being in the trenches. Yeah. And it's true for parenthood as well at that beginning, albeit it's at an absolute wonderful, like, baby bubble stage that's just incredible. You are literally treading water because you haven't got a clue what you're doing, when a certain phase is going to end. Everything says there's a regression at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's always a timeline on Google that you're like, hold on, just finished one. It's now started again. So it's funny, like the comparison between an early econ business and having a baby, of being in the trenches, and that same sort of like feeling.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've worked at a few startups, so I know how it goes and what the feeling is. But yeah, I think, there's times even in agency life, to be fair, where, you know, you sign a load of new clients and you are in the trenches. Maybe you've got a few other team on holiday and you still got to fulfill the work. So you just got to graft it out and get to the finish line. But as you see, I think with the kids, it is really learning on the job in the trenches, and you've got to be in it to kind of get out of it. And you learn a lot about yourself along the way. I think it is important for a relationship as well. You go into it with maybe not the strongest relationship. I imagine it does and can and probably frequently tests a lot of relationships having a child. Because yes, there's times when you're tired and you snap at each other, and you just got to accept that that's kind of the way it goes. But if you go into it maybe with a not so strong relationship and you argue a lot as it is, then the child comes and you argue 10 times as more. It's just, for me, you've got to be pretty settled before you have that child, because it just makes it 10 times harder otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. I think I've said this on, I think it was the first episode. It's like, if one parent is on 10%, the other one has to be on 90%. You have to, because I've spoken about it before, so I won't go into too much, but we went through a period where Brody's a really bad sleeper, and we ended up getting a sleep trainer to help us, because we were just like, we were both close to 10% each, and we were like, we can't function. Like, we need the sleep as much as he needs to sleep, so something had to change. And it's absolutely true, like, if you're not a team in it, things will be very, very hard, I can imagine, and it'd be a shame. But
we actually did speak to a sleep consultant as well. At the time, we were desperate. I mean, we were like 3 months in, but we're like, she can't sleep alone, she has to sleep on us, because she can't actually lie on her back without being uncomfortable. You get to that point of desperation, you're like, I just need some help. I just, like, what can we do differently to what we're doing?
There's a bit of a taboo with it. I think I've mentioned it to a few people, and sort of maybe non-parents or older people that have in the 60s, 70s are like, a sleep trainer, we didn't have that in our day. But like you're people are more than happy to invest in a personal trainer or a business coach or an agency to help them with business. But sleep is a form of sleep deprivation is a form of torture. Yeah. So if you're not getting it, why would it be a bad thing to ask someone who's an expert to say,
yeah,
can you please help us as a relationship sleep, because we need it to function, to work, to earn money, to feed. But then also a baby does all of its development, growth, everything while they're sleeping. So they're not sleeping. Yeah. It's medically bad for them. But it's such a strange thing that we waited till Brody was 13 months, because he was an okay sleeper. We had to assist him with a lot of his sleep, going back to sleep and through the night and stuff. When it got to the point where he's just not sleeping at all, and we're like, we had to do something. And like, I speak very highly of it. And if anyone ever is struggling now, I've already recommended the same person to two people, because it's like, just do it. Changed our lives completely. Yeah,
it does. Overnight, you're having the full night of sleep, and you're like, oh my god, that's what feeling rested feels like.
Yeah, mate. The first time we had one after Brody went, like, sort of completed his cycle of sleep training, I was like, I feel 18 again. I'm 35, but I feel 18 again. Madness. But it's all good. I guess there's one more question that someone asked, which I wouldn't mind you answering as well. Before you had your first child, did you have a number in mind that you would like, if everything was okay, of how many children you want? And did that number change after you had your first child?
I was always, well, there's three of us, and my three boys, me and two brothers. So I was always like, oh, it's nice to have siblings. So always was more than one. And to be honest, maybe even before Margot came, I would have been like maybe three. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think financially, like, it's just ridiculously expensive now to have a child, I think. Mm-hmm. And also, if you want to go on holiday and you want to do nice things still, there is a ceiling to it. I think maybe back in the day, you could have three, four kids and you weren't, yes, it was still hard, but things are ridiculously expensive now. So that was definitely played into it. But if I'd answered honestly, it'd be two. And two is definitely what I'm thinking now. I think maybe once Margot's a bit older and you look back and think, I'm never gonna have a baby again, then you maybe start, I can understand why people start thinking, oh, maybe I have a third.
Yeah.
But also, quite frankly, like, I think in the next couple of years, when Margot is bigger and we kind of get that life back, to then go back into baby again, I don't know if I could do that for a third time. You know, it'd be nice to start growing all together, enjoying life as a unit of four, without, you know, compromising on anyone because there's a new baby that comes. Because naturally, a new baby comes, the attention isn't just on the two, it's just on the, you know, the baby more than anything. So yeah, I mean, maybe if you speak to me in 2 years' time, we'll see what I'm saying, but I'm pretty sure it'll be two still.
Sticking at two. Okay, cool. To wrap things up, two final points. One, if I was to ask you to give one good bit of advice to a future dad that maybe you've been given, or that you've just sort of, you think is now very important to pass on, what would it be?
I think the biggest one is try and be the biggest support you can to your partner. Naturally, mums take the brunt of the job. But any small thing that you can do to help them, whether that's the washing, cleaning, whether that's doing a bottle or taking them for a walk so mum can sleep, you know, those things that to you are super small and don't feel like they would mean an awful lot, would mean a huge amount to your partner, like getting some sleep when they need it the most, or even just giving them their hands back, because they've probably gone all day for the last few days holding the baby and just looking at the baby that is also not giving them anything back, because they don't obviously speak for a long time. So yeah, that's my main bit of advice, is obviously the teamwork is such an important point. And to be a team, you've got to pick up the slack where the other one can't.
Yeah, I remember that very, very early on. I was just frantically trying to do as many acts of service as possible, because it's like the mom is doing so much of like the heavy lifting, like you said, that you're just like, I'll take the bin out three times a day, even if I don't need to, just so I am helping as much as I can, no matter how small or big those tasks are. So good bit of advice. Definitely. Final thing, what would your question be to the next guest on the podcast? It can be anything. Ooh. A little bit on the spot.
No, it is on the spot. What would I ask?
We've had some good ones. We've had some ones like, are you a walker or a talker? About the pocket money. What's your opinions on pocket money for children? We've had, did your number of children you want change after the first baby?
I'd probably say, what's your view on like the weekend classes for kids? Like, they've obviously been at nursery all week or whatever they've been doing, but they've been out of the house all week. Mm-hmm. What's your view on them also doing more activities on a Saturday and a Sunday, keeping them even busier? Like, sometimes they do want to just be at home. So how do you balance what's the right amount of extracurricular to what's like the right amount of actually home time as well?
That's a good question. It's a good question. What's your thoughts on it?
I think Amelie does little kickers on a Saturday. She's not great at it. She's not bothered about the football. She likes picking up the cones, like tidying away. But you know, it's a nice thing for her to do, get out of the house Saturday morning. I'd like to do more, but then she also just loves being at home. I think she's been out all week. So maybe one for me is like, maybe one is the perfect thing for her on a weekend.
Yeah.
Because she's busy the rest of the week. She does like being at home, and understandably she doesn't get loads of time at home in the week. So it's just finding that balance, but interesting to see and hear what other people do.
Yeah, well, I'll pose it to the next guest, and I'll send it over to you so you can have a listen to their response.
Yeah, nice. No, for sure.
But thank you very much for joining us. All the social media @ of the Diary of Daddy O will be in the comments. Please go and give us a follow, like, share, leave us a 5-star review so more people can see the podcast on socials and hear it on Apple and Spotify. And thank you again, mate, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. No, it was great to speak to you.
Cheers. Goodbye, everyone.
A work-life balance is hard to do while juggling a business and date nights too. But life goes on, so what baby we got? Now I'm trying to juggle work while feeding baby that bop. I deal with one dirty nappy and turn my back and hear 101 messages pinging through Slack. Sleep deprivation, you can see it in my eyes. As I hop on Google Meets, I hear the baby starts crying. So I mute and shout to mom, you okay in there, dear? She says, get on with your work, we'll be okay in here. I wash up the bottles around 8 or 9. By the time I'm in my office, sometimes it's lunchtime. Looked at my partner, said, one day I'll know how to juggle my new life as a successful daddy-o. Daddy-o.